Our aim with the summit is to provide you with as many views as we can to assist you in your journey to Tantra. We hope you find it valuable and insightful.
Welcome to the Ultimate Tantra Summit with your hosts, Verona Goga and Alan Stradom.
Welcome to the Ultimate Tantra Summit. Today we're speaking with Deborah Annapol. Deborah, tell us about you.
I've been spending a lot of time with non-dual teachers lately. And so this question of who are you is a bit of a trick question in those circles because of course, we all have the ego, the personality, who's done many things. I've done many things on this earth walk. And then the self, who we really are. And so many people lately are starting to make the shift. And so I'm finding for myself, talking about who I am, what I do, is not something that feels really comfortable anymore. And yet I understand as we navigate the everyday life that we need to keep one foot in that world, and otherwise there's nothing to say. There's nothing to do. And so let me see if I can get myself back to the earth world and share with you that I've been teaching about love and sex and relationships really my whole lifetime. And I've just turned 60 this year, so the lifetime's getting rather long. And of course, the longer we're around, the longer it takes to communicate what we do. But I've taught seminars, and I prefer to use the term erotic spirituality,
okay,
rather than tantra or sacred sexuality, and I prefer to use that term because I'm finding that spirituality really suggests that we are becoming increasingly aware of the spiritual aspect of life, the aspect which is whole, which is divine, and which is embodied. And, you know, often people study Tantra, and they take sex, and they prolong it, they put some ritual around it, and that's all wonderful, certainly heightens the sexual experience, but there's not anything in there that would suggest that we're shifting our focus from the ego, from the personality, to who we really are. And I think that's the essence of spirituality. That's where all spiritual paths are headed. And what's unique about Tantra is that instead of saying you have to leave your sexuality behind, you have to leave the senses behind, you have to leave the body behind, we take all of this with us.
Okay. And what brought you to that kind of a realization, Deborah?
Well, you know, like so many people, I've had glimpses of oneness, union, of a sense of identity beyond my personality, beyond what appears to be reality. And many of those glimpses, particularly in the beginning, came while I was engaged in sexual union. And I find that there's something about the sexual experience which connects us with our core, our source. And so this is what happened for me. It's happened for so many people. And I wanted to understand what's going on. What is all this? At that time, there were not many Western books or workshops. not many people talking about this.
Okay.
My journey actually took me into experimentation with psychedelic drugs initially. That seemed like the most accessible way to learn more about these other realms. And I discovered chakras. I discovered that I had the ability to move energy, to feel energy. And it was only later that I found teachers and writings that explained what we now call the neo-tantric arts as distinguished from the classical tantra, which is not just about sex. And I find I fall into the habit of using the word tantra to mean tantric sex, but it's actually, sex is only one leaf on the tree of tantra, but it's the leaf that is, for many people, the forbidden fruit, really, because our culture for thousands of years has been so sex negative. And so that's really another part of the story of how I moved into teaching seminars on tantra, because early in my life, I was a feminist, and part of feminism was challenging the patriarchal view of women as inferior and as bodies as being shameful, dirty, and of course women's sexuality being as attractive as it is to your normal average man was really blamed for the all of the urges that naturally took men and women toward pleasure, toward love, toward all that's good and beautiful in life. So I came into an interest in sexuality partly through a desire to end the war between the sexes, to create greater equality between men and women. And I saw that creating positive sexual experiences was a way to do that.
So do you do that kind of work right now? You're working with couples, or what is your focus now then?
Yes, I love working with couples, particularly to help people move through the blocks in their relationships, whether those are sexual blocks or emotional blocks, whether those are disagreements about what the relationship should look like. And I also work with women. I do workshops for women and sexual healing. And I teach a form of Western Tantra that was developed by Jack Painter called Pelvic Heart Integration, which really takes the basic concept, I think, at the core of Tantra. One of the basic concepts there is that we all have masculine and feminine inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this dance between the masculine and the feminine that not only creates the sexual energy that culminates in the orgasm, but also is the basis for our relationship with all of life. And it's shaped by our relationship with mother and father. And
sorry, when you say mother and father, are you meaning parents or as in...
Yes, well, that's the thing, is that, you know, our direct experience of masculine and feminine usually comes from our actual mother and father or whoever raised us.
Yeah, yeah.
And this greatly influences our perception of masculine and feminine. And so while ultimately we're talking about what you might call gods and goddesses or the divine, the transpersonal archetypes,
yeah,
we have that confused with the flawed human beings that we actually came into contact with. And so really for me, Tantra is about unlearning, about letting go or clearing the cultural imprints that come from our parents, our religious teachers, the media, schools. All of those things have imprinted us with things that are not truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tantra is a way of dissolving some of those imprints, and pelvic heart integration is a way of doing that that's really designed particularly by and for Western people.
And what exactly is the pelvic cart integration?
The pelvic cart integration is a synthesis of tantric and traditional Hindu tantric as well as Taoist teachings and Reikian breathwork and psychodrama and modern bodywork techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we work with all of these different levels at once, it's much more effective than just focusing on one or a few. It really allows, I'm quite known for my work in polyamory.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the advantages of polyamory as a spiritual path is that if you relate with several people at once, it's emotionally, mentally similar to, let's say you have three relationships in a row,
mm-hmm.
each 4 years long separately. Well, that takes 12 years. If you have three relationships simultaneously, you're having the same experience, but you're having it in 3 years.
And with different people as well.
Yes, and so you get the reflections from different people, and you get them simultaneously. And it makes it much more difficult to maintain whatever stuck places you may have brought with you into these relationships. And even though I think human beings, we all have a very strong desire for growth, spiritual growth, psychological growth, we also have this tendency to hang on to what's familiar,
mm-hmm.
to be stuck in our ways and very reluctant to let go of our habits.
And if you're to give some advice to our listeners, because, you know, polyamory might be something new to some of our listeners, so could you just share a little bit more about it?
Well, the word itself is a made-up word from Greek and Latin, and it means many loves. And like Tantra, you know, there's nothing in that word about sex, but people have really focused on the sexual aspect of it, and it's come to mean many sex partners. But the original meaning was not just sex partners, but loves. So I like to use the term sexual loving to suggest there's a connection, there's an integration of the sex and the love of the pelvis and the heart. And so in polyamory, people are honestly, openly, sensually, transparently creating relationships with more than one person at a time. And this could look a lot of different ways. It could be an open couple. It could be a group marriage. It could be more tribal, where single people and couples have ongoing committed relationships, but they don't necessarily live together or have children together. And in polyamory, there's really a possibility to create the relationship that is the right one for you individually, as opposed to trying to fit yourself into some form that may not be appropriate for you.
Mm-hmm.
In polyamory, the original idea was to let love show us what's the appropriate form for the relationship, rather than starting with a form and saying, this is what the relationship has to look like.
Deborah, when you started, you were speaking about how you find it difficult to define yourself now because of your understanding of ego, spirituality, etc. And you've just mentioned now about love would show the way. I find that a very interesting statement, and I agree with you, love would show the way. But can you speak a bit more about that? Because the one suggests ego and the ego gratification, and the other is something more. Am I right?
Absolutely, yes. And again, this is the paradigm shift.
Mm.
The paradigm shift in love, I think, is the last paradigm shift, really, that people are open to making, because it's closest to home.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to have an intellectual understanding of, a paradigm shift in spirituality from the paradigm of God, the male God, or even goddess above up in heaven, or ourselves as divine, that divine nature within us. So that's a spiritual paradigm shift.
Mm.
But when we translate this into our intimate relationships, it becomes really challenging because it's a paradigm shift from a relationship whose purpose is to gratify the ego, to make us look good, feel comfortable and secure, to have an illusion of predictability, because people often feel that through monogamy they can create a situation where they know that they have a partner they count on. Mm. But the truth is, you can't ever know that. Even if your partner never cheats on you or decides they want a divorce, they might die.
Yeah.
So there's really no guarantees in monogamy, but there's an illusion of a guarantee. And the paradigm shift, let me say, can happen in monogamy. You can have a very conscious, evolved monogamous relationship, and you can have a very unconscious and unenlightened polyamorous relationship. So it's absolutely not true that one is more spiritual or evolved or conscious than the other.
Yeah, definitely.
But, yeah. But in polyamory, if you try to get complicated with your relationships with many people, and if you try to maintain your personality with its demands for security and predictability and control, you're going to be constantly frustrated in polyamory. You're going to be constantly coming into situations that are challenging for the ego, the biggest one for most people being jealousy.
Okay.
Now, people have the idea that Tantra, in fact, you'll even hear many teachers saying that Tantra can only be practiced in a monogamous relationship or with a single partner. And this is about as far as you can get from the classical tantric concept, in which tantric practice had nothing to do with mundane relationship, everyday relationship. The goal of Tantra was and is enlightenment, transcendence of the ego. And whatever it is that the ego is attached to is something that is a barrier in the way of the tantric goal of enlightenment. So to the extent that people are attached to their monogamous relationship or their particular partner, this becomes a barrier. This becomes exactly the reverse of the intention of tantric practice. Now, you can, of course, be attached to several partners. So,
I was waiting for you to say that.
It's not that adding more partners overcomes this, but I don't know where this idea comes from, that this is a practice for monogamous couples, although it's true that tantric sex is a beautiful way for monogamous couples to deepen their sexual experience. That's absolutely valid, and there's nothing wrong with that.
But the truth would also be for those in a polyamorous relationship.
And for those who, whatever kind of relationship they're in, recognize that their tantric practice is not about their relationship with another person.
Mm-hmm.
It's about knowing themselves as God, goddess,
as
force.
Yeah. So, Deborah, in your mind, what would you say is the aim of being in a polyamorous relationship then?
Well, that aim differs from person to person, just as it differs for those who are choosing monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
My teachers, their view was that the purpose of all sexual relationships, the highest purpose, is actually the purpose of expressing your purpose, if you follow me.
Yes.
So we might choose a partner based on sexual attraction or based on the desire to create a family or based on the desire to acquire wealth, you know, whatever motives people have. Mm-hmm. But the highest motive is to connect with others who share your life purpose. And through that connection, so people talk about this as co-creation these days, but through this connection with others who share your purpose, you become better able to express it. Now, this is true with one partner, but there's a synergistic effect. If you add more partners with shared purpose, then it's not just doubled or tripled, it's exponentially increased. Now, most people practicing polyamory are not coming at it from that perspective, which is unfortunate in my opinion, but this is, we can only have the level of understanding that we have, and we make the choices that we make based on our level of understanding.
So what would you say what angle that they're all coming from?
Well, I think for some people, probably for the majority of people, actually what they're looking for is either a broader sexual experience, because our culture tells us as young people, as teenagers, young adults, that we shouldn't explore our sexuality. And so many people don't get around to exploring their sexuality until much later in life. And at that point, they're actually perhaps married or ready to start a family. And so they're looking for a way to combine a committed relationship with sexual exploration.
Okay.
Or in some cases, they're just trying to keep their sex life intact, because for most people, they get into a sexual rut with one person. And they have a need to shut down a lot of their sexual energy in order to maintain a monogamous commitment, because they've tried to make that monogamous commitment before they actually were developmentally mature enough to make it.
Yeah.
And then, Deborah, how would someone introduce polyamory into a relationship?
Well, it's best to introduce it by being it at the time that you make the connection with a partner. That is, it's much easier to have the idea, I might like to explore polyamory, and here's a partner who also wants to explore polyamory. And the conversation about exploring polyamory, even though, you know, it may not be the thing you do in the second you meet each other. I think sometimes people are afraid to focus on one person because they'll lose their polyamorous identity. But this is something ideally that's discussed before you get very deep into a relationship with someone. Mm. That's the ideal way. But the reality is that some people, you know, they may be 10, 20 years into a relationship before it occurs to them that maybe monogamy actually isn't what they want to be doing. Mm-hmm. So if that's the situation, I recommend that people introduce the subject by reading one of my books, Partner, or bringing a movie, and there's many movies these days that deal with polyamorous relationships, bringing that, or a book that deals with polyamorous relationships, a novel. And rather than talking about, you know, I've decided I'm going to be polyamorous and I've got a date next week and running off and doing it, opening up the conversation as, this is something that I find interesting. I'd like to talk about it. And this doesn't mean that I've made a decision to do this, but I'd like to have this conversation. I'd like to know what you think about it.
Mm. Okay. Sounds like a good, safe place to start.
Yeah. Now, it's not necessarily safe, because for a lot of people, even to bring up the conversation, I might want to have sex with someone else someday. You know, this is like, people can't even imagine that they would have that much freedom to make that statement within a relationship. Mm-hmm. And so instead of doing that, they think, oh, it will actually be much better if I just go off and have the sexual relationship and don't tell my partner and don't have to deal with his or her anxiety or anger or shaming me or whatever it is. And it looks like that's going to be a lot easier. But actually, when the partner finds out, as eventually they will, that there's been a breaking of a commitment, it's much more difficult than it would have been to bring up the topic in the beginning.
And then, Deborah, so what would be the specific link between Tantra and polyamory?
Well, Tantra and polyamory are not necessarily connected. However, what they have in common is they are both spiritual paths, and I really do consider polyamory a spiritual path, mm-hmm. that are embodied, that work with our hearts and our sex. Whereas most spiritual paths in the West, in what we call civilization, will tell you that we need to leave our bodies and our genitals and our hearts out of it. And when I say hearts, you know, what I really mean here is the intimate relationship. An intimate relationship can be, if you're committed to truth, yeah, it will show you very quickly everything that's not truth, mm-hmm. whether yeah. it's monogamous or polyamorous.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And then, Deborah, earlier you were talking about that sex is just one leaf of Tantra.
Yes.
Can you just share with us about the other leaves of Tantra?
Well, yes. And what comes to mind when I think of this is the Kama Sutra, which is probably the most associated writings having to do with Tantra. But very few people have read the Kama Sutra. And if they did, they would discover that there are 64 arts of love which are discussed, and sex is a very small part of this. And sexual positions are even a smaller part of this. Instead, the focus is much more on the senses, really getting out of the head and into the body.
Mm.
And this is, most of us are not living in our bodies. We're living in our heads, particularly in 21st century Western world. And most of us have no idea to the extent to which we're living in our minds, in our heads. And we're so consumed with our thoughts and our perceptions, what we think we see and hear and feel, we actually have no idea. And so the tantric arts, this was also true for people at the time when Tantra was developed. And so it was really a movement, even thousands of years ago, to get people back in touch with reality, what's really so.
Okay.
And then if you have to share what your specific message and what your specific interest in Tantra is, what would that be?
My message is that Tantra is about letting go, peeling away, dissolving all that is not your true nature. It's not that you need to add anything on to who you already are. It's more that you need to uncover, let go, dissolve what's not who you really are. Now, this is perhaps too simple for those who've been trained that they're not enough, that they're not okay, but it's really that simple.
Hmm.
Tantra tells us we're already perfect. We're already whole. We're already awake. It's just a matter of realizing this.
Okay. And who would be the typical person who would come to see you?
Well, typical people that come to see me are people who have found out that achieving in the material world, wonderful as it is not really enough. People who have created successful relationships, successful career, maybe raised some children or have young children, and they enjoy all of these things, and yet they realize there's more.
Okay. We've just got two more questions for you. The one is, how do our listeners get in touch with you, and how do they get to learn more about the books that you have? So if you want to answer that one first.
Well, the best place to find out about who I am and what I've done is my website, lovewithoutlimits.com. And my most recent book is Polyamory in the 21st Century, which is a great overview of polyamory based on a couple of decades of watching this whole movement develop and evolve. And my favorite book that of the ones that I've written, though, is The Seven Natural Laws of Love, which really describes the new paradigm for love. And I realized after many years working in polyamory that I just didn't have the guts to say, I'm going to redefine love. And so I called it polyamory. But I realize now it's really just redefining love. And so The Seven Natural Laws of Love, there's not anything original in there particularly, but I've distilled out of spiritual traditions from all over the world, what is conscious love? What is love? Not the love we've been taught, but what is it really?
Deborah, can you share with us quickly what the seven natural laws of love are? Just even if they, you just list them.
Sure. And I've kind of keyed these seven laws to the seven chakras.
Okay.
But that's just, you know, my mind's idea of how they fit. So the first one is that love is its own law. The second one I call the law of source, the law of attraction, the law of unity, the law of truth, the law of consciousness, and the law of forgiveness. I could take a couple of minutes maybe to describe what each of those are.
That would be great. Thanks.
I'll try to keep it brief since that could be a whole other interview. So first, love is its own law, meaning that let love be your guiding principle, not your mind, your beliefs, your assumptions, and let love dictate your behavior. The law of source, pretty simple to realize that the source of love is inside of you. It's not anywhere outside in another person. Mm. And since it's inside of you, you don't need to control others or compromise who you are in order to be loved. You already are love. The law of attraction, this is a popular one lately. And just means that if you focus on love, and particularly on gratitude, this will attract more love into your life. Gratitude is actually the receptive form of love, and this is why it's such a powerful magnet. It's the yin form of love, is gratitude. The law of unity, this means love is inclusive. Now, it also means that love knows no boundaries, no borders. It takes no position. And so anything calling itself love that leads to separation is not love.
Deborah, sorry, would you say that polyamory fits into that?
Well, certainly, yes. Now, you know, we're talking here about love, not sex. So this doesn't necessarily mean that you have no sexual boundaries. But in terms of the heart, in terms of the love connection, Yes, polyamory is a step toward recognizing that this is not something that's limited to one person, but for everyone.
Mm.
Okay.
So we're up to law five, which is the law of truth. And I really love this one because really it means the more truth is shared, the more love grows. And it's just the opposite of what so many of us have been taught, which is that if we tell the truth, we won't be loved. And so we're afraid to tell the truth. And we never find out that even sharing something in a vulnerable way allows for more empathy, more understanding, more love. The law of consciousness, in some ways, maybe this one should come first because I think this is the core of the paradigm shift,
mm-hmm.
is realizing that love is a vibration. It's a state of consciousness. It's not a thing. It's not something that you can give or take, but you can share it. And again, this relates to polyamory because people have the idea there's a finite amount of love. Kind of the metaphor of love as a pie is one that a lot of people have used. And so if you have a big piece of pie, then I'm not going to have as much. Mm-hmm. But the shift to realizing that love is a vibration, is a state of consciousness, the metaphor would be love is a radio station. And an infinite number of people can tune into the radio station,
mm-hmm.
can hear that vibration. And it doesn't dilute it at all. And then finally, the law of forgiveness, which for me, I always think of this as the path to unconditional love, because the truth is that we are human and none of us is perfect. And as much as we may want to be unconditional in our love, as much as we want to love perfectly, we're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's okay. If we forgive ourselves and forgive each other, there's always a second chance.
So Deborah, obviously your book goes into actual processes for each law then that people can follow.
Yes.
Awesome, okay.
Deborah, the final interaction with the listeners, could you please just take the listeners through a process that they can also just practice at home?
Sure. So a lot of people find it much easier to love someone else than to love themselves. So this is an exercise for people to utilize some of that powerful feeling of love for others and turn it around and allow themselves to bask in that glow of love. And it's quite simple. And it just starts with finding yourself a comfortable place. Maybe your bed or your meditation cushion, a warm beach, it doesn't matter. Some place where you can relax and feel comfortable. And bring to mind someone, either from your past or currently, who you feel a deep love for. Someone who lights up your heart. And someone who there's also a passionate, erotic connection. And really bring that feeling fully into your body of all the admiration, all the respect, all the sexual desire, all of the fullness of the love that you feel for whoever this person is that really lights up your life. Bring that into all of your senses, every cell of your body. And then turn that feeling around to yourself. All of that passion, all of that beauty, all of that devotion. Turn that around to yourself. Feel that coming back to yourself. And if you find impossible to do this, don't give up in failure or try to force it, but use this as an opportunity to see what's in the way, what stops you. Become aware of that. Feel that fully, completely, and all the way. And then maybe at another time, try again. This is a simple exercise that can be done anytime you want to connect more with the energy of love.
Great. Thank you. That's great.
Thanks, Deborah, for joining us. And the listeners have learned quite a bit about a various number of topics. And I'm sure they'll be contacting you soon.
Okay. Thank you.